I don't have all the stories and probably will never. So I just kind of got to a point to where the book was about 170 pages, and I said, well, this is a lot.
This is Something from Nothing. I'm Justin Lewis. Today's episode features an author that has written a book on Purchase Area legends. The author, Richard Parker, is a local
educator for the U.S. Forest Service, the Shawnee National Forest. My spare time, I like to write historical articles and books if I have a chance with enough time.
And fortunately for the West Kentucky and Tennessee region, he took the time to put together the wild world of the Purchase Area. The Purchase Area is the far western part of Kentucky, bounded by the Mississippi River to the west, Ohio River to the north, and Tennessee River to the east. This area was purchased from the Chickasaw Indians by Andrew Jackson in 1818, hence the Jackson Purchase. The original deal also included all of Tennessee west of the Tennessee River. This week on the show, how a Shawnee National Forest educator got the idea to write a book about the Jackson Purchase while living in eastern Kentucky, and what it took to make the book about the wild world of the Jackson Purchase come to life. Stay tuned. Support for Something from Nothing comes from Taylor Group PLLC at 15th and Jefferson in Paducah. For both businesses and individuals, Taylor Group works with clients to achieve financial viability in the present while being proactive for future goals. More about their services at taylorgroupplc.com. A community-minded accounting firm, they also have an appreciation for the creative process and the individuals involved. Richard was basically raised to be a historian. As a child, his parents visited all the Civil War battlefields, and as he got a little older, he joined the Boy Scouts, and it was the norm for the group to check out what were, in his words, the nerdy history locations. But Richard loved it. He shared what was one of the most influential field trips that helped foster his appreciation for history.
In Paris, Tennessee, where I grew up, they would take us on field trips, and one of our field trips one time, I think it may have been third grade, but I may be wrong, was to downtown Paris, and downtown Paris is very historic, and they've really done a good job at preserving a lot of things, but one of the buildings we got to go in was the Crete Opera House, and it's just this really cool place, and I think it was only open a few years, but it was traveling theater productions would come through and do shows for the local population, and the building's still there. It's very beautiful. I think it was built during the Victorian era, and so it's kind of one of my favorite buildings there in my hometown.
So started early then, and just kind of kept progressing the interest in history.
Yes, yeah, I'd say it snowballed.
So with all this love of history and becoming an educator himself, putting together a book isn't a surprise. In fact, Richard was already working on articles for the Jackson Purchase Journal. He had collected some stories and
I started to look and was like, wow, you know, the 200th anniversary is in 2018. Wouldn't it be cool if I had all these stories collected together in kind of a short format and had those to where people can, you know, briefly read a little blurb about this story or this, you know, figure of our area to kind of bring some recognition to our area.
At that time, he was actually not living in the Jackson Purchase. He and his wife were living in eastern Kentucky as teachers. He said writing the book was a help for him at that time. He was missing the Jackson Purchase. So, although he was living away, Richard was still able to do research. He mentioned a few online resources he used, including newspapers.com. When they moved back to the region, he was able to really focus on this project and go to libraries in the area.
So a lot of the research that I did, as I would look at individual counties and kind of see, you know, who was famous from that county or people who kind of stood out, and then also stories that were kind of important to the area on a local scale or a national scale. So I would start there, kind of researching online, and then I would try to go to libraries in the county or like kind of or what I like to call our regional libraries, like Pogue Library, and then also the McCracken County Library has a lot of regional histories. Mm-hmm. So I would kind of take those topics there and then go research. And of course, when you're researching one topic, you turn up about five new ones, and you can only research about two of those. So, yeah, it was, I guess, a very selective process, just because there's so much history out there.
Richard said that writing this book took him about 3 years, and described the writing process for me.
So I think the biggest thing is like, I really like to read the source and dissect the source first, and then see kind of like, you know, what's the relative information here? What's the main point? Because I'm not much on kind of the fluff in some things. And of course, with a lot of sources, if they're primary too, they're super biased. And you have to really get that out, especially if they come from a newspaper. But, you know, I really like to get to that point and then make my point kind of based upon that point, and then tying together all these points into a story. And I really like to see how all that comes together. And I try to get it all organized to me. And then, like, once that section's done, I'm like, wow, that's kind of satisfying that all that fit together.
The book is filled with characters from the Jackson Purchase. Each person has a 200 to 300 word blurb. I asked the author how he was able to narrow down the stories to keep them at such a concise length.
So I try to highlight some of their most important contributions, and then also try to highlight some, I guess, local factoids or local events that were, you know, significant to our area, you know, that I think was real neat. I think the only one that was kind of a one that was kind of difficult to keep in a few pages was Luther Carson's. That was one that was pretty hard just because there's so much information on him. And then, of course, kind of focused real heavy on the coke plant because that's when that was really getting, you know, reopened and renovated and stuff. And so that was another one just because he had so much of a regional importance to our area and some of the companies he founded besides just bottling Coca-Cola.
Not only did Richard see how important some of the people in the area are, while Richard was putting this book together, there were stories he found particularly surprising. One was about a man with four names, Theodore Roosevelt Mason Howard.
And he's an actual civil rights leader that was born in Murray, Kentucky. And it was a really interesting story because his mother worked as a kind of a cook for one of the local doctors there, and his name was Will Mason, and Will Mason kind of saw Theodore and basically kind of took him under his wing and gave him a job at the hospital and stuff. And so eventually they worked on a mentor, to establish a mentor relationship, and Mason actually paid for his school. And so eventually Howard becomes a doctor and is, you know, very much thankful, but he goes on and basically becomes a civil rights leader in Mississippi from working in a hospital there. And then eventually he actually went on a national speaking tour after the Emmett Till trial.
Just a quick history refresher here. Emmett Till was the 14-year-old black boy who was lynched in 1955 for the way he treated a white woman in a grocery store. Details on the interaction are unclear. Two white men were charged, but were found not guilty by an all-white jury. The following year, these men admitted to killing Till, but at that point, it was too late to do anything. This was a defining moment in the civil rights movement, and Howard played a role in this in a few ways. One, because he
used his house as kind of a headquarters for activists traveling to the trial, and then also the Till family stayed with him during it. And then afterwards, he went on this national speaking tour, and I guess one of the most important ramifications from that is that he spoke in Montgomery, Alabama, 4 days before Rosa Parks had her famous sit-in, and she was actually in attendance of that. And one of the things that she stated to the press later on was, is that all she kept thinking about was what they did to that poor little boy, Emmett Till. And so there, you know, an argument can be made that Howard influenced her and her line of thought.
So, a guy born in Murray, Kentucky, amongst many other civil rights accomplishments, may have, by communicating the power of the Emmett Till story, made an impact on Rosa Parks' decision to stay at the front of the bus. Stories like that one were surprises for Richard to learn about. On the other hand, there are stories that seem destined to be in a book about the Jackson Purchase, but were left out. An example being Jack Sleuth, who even has his own historical marker by the river in Paducah.
That says that he laid one of the first underground telegraph or underwater telegraph cables. And he did do that. And that's 100% true. The claim to fame and even the historical marker has the wrong date on it. I think the date's like 1847. And his was, I think, about 10, maybe 12 years later is what the newspapers kind of proved that he did. But that I think the 1847 date would have made him the first person ever. And so that has kind of been put into kind of a legend around Paducah, and that's necessarily not, from what I found, wasn't the true date. So that did not make the book. It's a very interesting story because it is important historically, just because I'm pretty positive that was the first cable laid across the Ohio. So that's very important in itself. As things moved on, dates changed with people's stories, and, you know, now today, we have the luxury of being able to look at primary sources, newspapers and stuff, and kind of fact-checking a little bit easier than, you know, maybe they had that luxury 100 years ago when they were, you know, writing stories down.
One of the stories that was included was a local legend, Speedy Adkins. To me, this guy is the type of story that earns the title Wild World. It's one of the most interesting stories, in my opinion, and Richard did a great job telling it to me during our interview.
So Speedy was a tobacco twister here in Paducah, and I guess he was fishing one day on the Tennessee River, and the story goes that I guess he fell in and he drowned, and because there was no one to claim his body, that A.Z. Hammock, one of the local funeral parlor owners, basically took Speedy's body, and he was working on a new embalming solution, and he embalmed Speedy, and basically it mummified Speedy. And so from what I found initially, Speedy was kind of put on display there in the funeral home, and then I guess some people kind of got upset about that, and so Hammock started actually putting him in the closet, and you had to ask to see Speedy. But Speedy was in the closet. I think Speedy passed on in maybe the 20s or the 30s. And I know that he was still on display all the way up until like the late 80s. And then I think in 94, they finally buried Speedy. You would ask to see him. And I know a lot of people here in Paducah who actually got to see Speedy. So that's really interesting to me. Once Speedy was buried, it like made national news everywhere because people were just fascinated that this mummy had been here all this time. And then, you know, here we are. Here's almost nearly a state funeral for the guy because there's a lot of dignitaries there for his burial.
The Speedy story was one of the early stories he had accumulated for the book, as he had written about it for another journal that was published in Texas. It's a classic Paducah story, even inspiring a song from the Paducah Form band, the legendary Shack Shakers. An artistic rendering of Speedy by Richard was added to the book. He ended up adding a few illustrations of other characters to help bring the stories to life. He said he isn't a natural artist in this way. The drawings are simple, but colorful, and are there to add some depth to the publication. Richard has plans to keep writing, and is already on to his next topic.
It's a book about the Buckskin Bill's Wild West Show, and that was based here out of Paducah for 2 seasons, and then eventually it was sold to some investors in Chicago. And they enlisted Cole Younger and Frank James of the Jesse James Gang after they got out of prison. And then they went in 1903 for the circus season. Those two kind of led the show, and they were the main attraction. It's just all sorts of stories there, too. And then after that, they had, the Buckskin Bill show had one more year, and then eventually all the stuff was sold and moved on. But at one point in the 1901 season, or maybe the 1902 season, they were the largest Wild West show in America because Buffalo Bills went to Europe, and they kind of measured that on how many rail cars they had on the railroad at the time, moving city to city. So to me, it's really neat story, real interesting, because, I mean, basically people from all over the world came to Paducah and lived here in Paducah during the winter. And then when they headed out in late spring, you know, that whole show went with them. And just, I mean, tons of people here in the city were involved in some form. So it's a really neat story. And I'm hoping, because it's a very relatively unknown topic. I've talked to circus historian experts, and I mean, they just have a few things about it. But we have a lot of the histories here in Paducah on it.
As you can probably tell, Richard is very passionate and geeks out about history in the Purchase area. So I expect to see projects for years to come from this author. I mean, when doing research for this episode, I learned Richard was even in a band called the Jackson Purchase while he was in college. This has been yet another episode of Something from Nothing, a podcast about the creative process and the individuals involved. Support for this season of Something from Nothing comes from Paducah's Taylor Group, PLLC, a community-minded accounting firm proud to support the creative process. Offering small business consultation, tax services, retirement planning, and more, Taylor Group works to help clients achieve financial viability. There's more about their services online at taylorgroupplc.com. Thanks to Stacey Reason for editorial suggestions. For more episodes, Apple Podcast app has a bunch, as well as Google Play. And all 5 seasons are available on WKMS.org. If you don't mind, it would be really nice if I could get you to leave me a review on the Apple Podcast app. Next week, we'll feature another creator who uses their unique skill and talent to create something from nothing. I'm your host and producer of this show, Justin Lewis. Thanks for listening.